This audiobook provided courtesy of www.paradisetbc.org.
Antiquities of the Jews, Book 20. Containing the interval of 22 years. From Fatus the Procurator to Florus. Chapter 1. Upon the death of King Agrippa, which we have related in the foregoing book, Claudius Caesar sent Cassius Longinus as successor to Marcus, out of regard to the memory of King Agrippa, who had often desired of him by letters, while he was alive, that he would not suffer Marcus to be any longer president of Syria. But Fatus, as soon as he was come procurator into Judea, found quarrelsome doings between the Jews that dwelt in Perea, and the people of Philadelphia, about their borders, at a village called Nea, that was filled with men of a warlike temper. For the Jews of Perea had taken up arms without the consent of their principal men, and had destroyed many of the Philadelphians. When Fatus was informed of this procedure, it provoked him very much that they had not left the determination of the matter to him, if they thought that the Philadelphians had done them any wrong, but had rashly taken up arms against them. So he seized upon three of their principal men, who were also the causes of this sedition, and ordered them to be bound, and afterwards had one of them slain, whose name was Hannibal, and he banished the other two, Aram and Eleazar. Ptolemy also, the arch-robber, was, after some time, brought to him bound, and slain, but not till he had done a world of mischief to Ajumi, and the Arabians. And indeed, from that time, Judea was cleared of robberies by the care and providence of Fatus. He also at this time sent for the high priests, and the principal citizens of Jerusalem. And this at the command of the emperor, and admonished them that they should lay up the long garment, and the sacred vestment, which it is customary for nobody but the high priest to wear, in the tower of Antonia, that it might be under the power of the Romans, as it had been formerly. Now the Jews durst not contradict what he had said, but desired Fatus, however, and Longinus, which last was come to Jerusalem, and had brought a great army with him, out of a fear that the rigid injunctions of Fatus should force the Jews to rebel, that they might, in the first place, have leave to send ambassadors to Caesar, to petition him that they may have the holy vestments, under their own power, and that, in the next place, they would tarry, till they knew what answer Claudius would give to that their request. So they replied, that they would give them leave to send their ambassadors, provided they would give them their sons as pledges for their peaceable behavior. And when they had agreed so to do, and had given them the pledges they desired, the ambassadors were sent accordingly. But when, upon their coming to Rome, Agrippa Jr., the son of the deceased, understood the reason why they came, for he dwelt with Claudius Caesar, as we said before, he besought Caesar to grant the Jews their request about the holy vestments, and to send a message to Fatus accordingly. Hereupon Claudius called for the ambassadors, and told them that he granted their request, and bade them to return their thanks to Agrippa for this favor, which had been bestowed on them upon his entreaty. And besides these answers of his, he sent the following letter by them, Claudius Caesar Germanicus, tribune of the people the fifth time, and designed consul the fourth time, and imperator the tenth time, the father of his country, to the magistrates, senate, and people, and the whole nation of the Jews, sendeth greeting. Upon the presentation of your ambassadors to me by Agrippa, my friend, whom I have brought up, and have now with me, and who is a person of very great piety, who are come to give me thanks, for the care I have taken of your nation, and to entreat me, in an earnest and obliging manner, that they may have the holy vestments, with the crown belonging to them, under their power, I grant their request, as that excellent person Vitellius, who is very dear to me, had done before me, and I have complied with your desire. In the first place, out of regard to that piety which I profess, and because I would have every one worship God according to the laws of their own country, and this I do also, because I shall hereby highly gratify King Herod and Agrippa Jr., whose sacred regards to me and earnest goodwill to you, I am well acquainted with, and with whom I have the greatest friendship, and whom I highly esteem, and look on as persons of the best character. Now I have written about these affairs to Cuspius Fadus, my procurator. The names of those that brought me your letter are Cornelius, the son of Zero, Trypho, the son of Theudio, Dorotheus, the son of Nathaniel, and John, the son of Jotra. This letter is dated before the 4th of the calends of July, when Rufus and Pompeius Silvanus are consuls. Herod also, the brother of the deceased Agrippa, who was then possessed of the royal authority over Chalcis, petitioned Claudius Caesar for the authority over the temple, and the money of the sacred treasure, and the choice of the high priests, and obtained all that he petitioned for. So that after that time this authority continued among all his descendants, till the end of the war. Accordingly, Herod removed the last high priest, called Sympharus, and bestowed that dignity on his successor Joseph, the son of Kentos. Chapter 2. About this time it was that Helena, queen of Adiabene, and her son Azates, changed their course of life, and embraced the Jewish customs, and this on the occasion following. Monobazus, the king of Adiabene, who had also the name of Basius, fell in love with his sister Helena, and took her to be his wife, and begat her with child. But as he was in bed with her one night, he laid his hand upon his wife's belly, and fell asleep, and seemed to hear a voice, which bid him take his hand off his wife's belly, and not hurt the infant that was therein, which, by God's providence, would be safely born, and have a happy end. This voice put him into disorder, so he awaked immediately, and told the story to his wife, and when his son was born, he called him Azates. He had indeed Monobazus, his elder brother, by Helena also, and he had other sons by other wives besides. Yet did he openly place all his affections on this his only begotten son Azates, which was the origin of that envy which his other brethren, by the same father, bore to him, while on this account they hated him more and more, and were all under great affliction, that their father should prefer Azates before them. Now although their father was very sensible of these their passions, yet did he forgive them, as not indulging those passions out of an ill disposition, but out of a desire each of them had to be beloved by their father. However, he sent Azates, with many presents, to Abinerig, the king of Cherixpasini, and that out of the great dread he was in about him, lest he should come to some misfortune by the hatred his brethren bore him, and he committed his son's preservation to him. Upon which Abinerig gladly received the young man, and had a great affection for him, and married him to his own daughter, whose name was Symmachus. He also bestowed a country upon him, from which he received large revenues. But when Monobazus was grown old, and saw that he had but a little time to live, he had a mind to come to the sight of his son, before he died. So he sent for him, and embraced him after the most affectionate manner, and bestowed on him a country called Cara. It was a soil that bare mamam in great plenty. There are also in it the remains of that ark, wherein it is related that Noah escaped the deluge, and where they are still shown to such as are desirous to see them. Accordingly, Azates abode in that country until his father's death. But the very day that Monobazus died, Queen Helena sent for all the grandees and governors of the kingdom, and for those that had the armies committed to their command, and when they were come, she made the following speech to them: I believe you are not unacquainted that my husband was desirous Azates should succeed him in the government, and thought him worthy so to do. However, I wait your determination, for happy is he who receives a kingdom, not from a single person only, but from the willing suffrages of a great many. This she said, in order to try those that were invited, and to discover their sentiments. Upon the hearing of which, they first of all paid their homage to the queen, as their custom was, and then they said that they confirmed the king's determination, and would submit to it, and they rejoiced that Azates's father had preferred him before the rest of his brethren, as being agreeable to all their wishes, but that they were desirous first of all to slay his brethren and kinsmen, that so the government might come securely to Azates, because if they were once destroyed, all that fear would be over which might arise from their hatred and envy to him. Helena replied to this, that she returned them her thanks for their kindness, to herself and to Isaites, but desired that they would however defer the execution of the slaughter of Isaites's brethren, till he should be there himself, and give his approbation to it. So since these men had not prevailed with her, when they advised her to slay them, they exhorted her at least to keep them in bonds, till he should come, and that for their own security. They also gave her counsel, to set up someone whom she could put the greatest trust in, as a governor of the kingdom in the meantime. So Queen Helena complied with this counsel of theirs, and set up Monobazus, the eldest son, to be king, and put the diadem upon his head, and gave him his father's ring, with its signet, as also the ornament which they call Sampser, and exhorted him to administer the affairs of the kingdom, till his brother should come, who came suddenly upon hearing that his father was dead, and succeeded his brother Monobazus, who resigned up the government to him. Now, during the time Isaites abode at Charax-Spasini, a certain Jewish merchant, whose name was Ananias, got among the women that belonged to the king, and taught them to worship God according to the Jewish religion. He, moreover, by their means, became known to Isaites, and persuaded him, in like manner, to embrace that religion. He also, at the earnest entreaty of Isaites, accompanied him, when he was sent for by his father, to come to Adiabene. It also happened that Helena, about the same time, was instructed by a certain other Jew, and went over to them. But when Isaites had taken the kingdom, and was come to Adiabene, and there saw his brethren, and other kinsmen in bonds, he was displeased at it, and, as he thought it an instance of impiety, either to slay or imprison them, but still thought it a hazardous thing, for to let them have their liberty, with the remembrance of the injuries that had been offered them, he sent some of them and their children for hostages to Rome, to Claudius Caesar, and sent the others to Artabanus, the king of Parthia, with the like intentions. And when he perceived that his mother was highly pleased with the Jewish customs, he made haste to change, and to embrace them entirely, and, as he supposed that he could not he thoroughly edge, unless he were circumcised, he was ready to have it done. But when his mother understood what he was about, she endeavored to hinder him from doing it, and said to him that this thing would bring him into danger, and that, as he was a king, he would thereby bring himself into great odium among his subjects, when they should understand that he was so fond of rites that were to them strange and foreign, and that they would never bear to be ruled over by a Jew. This it was that she said to him, and for the present persuaded him to forbear. And when he had related what she had said to Ananias, he confirmed what his mother had said, and when he had also threatened to leave him, unless he complied with him, he went away from him, and said that he was afraid lest such an action being once become public to all, he should himself be in danger of punishment for having been the occasion of it, and having been the king's instructor in actions that were of ill reputation. And he said that he might worship God without being circumcised, even though he did resolve to follow the Jewish law entirely, which worship of God was of a superior nature to circumcision. He added that God would forgive him, though he did not perform the operation, while it was omitted out of necessity, and for fear of his subjects. So the king at that time complied with these persuasions of Ananias. But afterwards, as he had not quite left off his desire of doing this thing, a certain other Jew, that came out of Galilee, whose name was Eleazar, and who was esteemed very skillful in the learning of his country, persuaded him to do the thing. For, as he entered into his palace, to salute him, and found him reading the law of Moses, he said to him, "Thou dost not consider, O king, that thou unjustly breakest the principle of those laws, and art injurious to God himself, by omitting to be circumcised, for thou oughtest not only to read them, but chiefly to practice what they enjoin thee. How long wilt thou continue uncircumcised? But if thou hast not yet read the law about circumcision, and dost not know how great impiety thou art guilty of by neglecting it, read it now." When the king had heard what he said, he delayed the thing no longer, but retired to another room, and sent for a surgeon, and did what he was commanded to do. He then sent for his mother, and Ananias his tutor, and informed them that he had done the thing, upon which they were presently struck with astonishment and fear, and that to a great degree, lest the thing should be openly discovered and censured, and the king should hazard the loss of his kingdom, while his subjects would not bear to be governed by a man, who was so zealous in another religion, and lest they should themselves run some hazard, because they would be supposed the occasion of his so doing. But it was God himself who hindered what they feared from taking effect, for he preserved both Azates himself and his sons, when they fell into many dangers, and procured their deliverance, when it seemed to be impossible, and demonstrated thereby that the fruit of piety does not perish, as to those that have regard to him, and fixed their faith upon him only. But these events we shall relate hereafter. But as to Helena, the king's mother, when she saw that the affairs of Izates's kingdom were in peace, and that her son was a happy man, and admired among all men, and even among foreigners, by the means of God's providence over him, she had a mind to go to the city of Jerusalem, in order to worship at that temple of God which was so very famous among all men, and to offer her thank offerings there. So she desired her son to give her leave to go thither, upon which he gave his consent, to what she desired very willingly, and made great preparations for her dismission, and gave her a great deal of money, and she went down to the city Jerusalem, her son conducting her on her journey a great way. Now her coming was a very great advantage to the people of Jerusalem. For whereas a famine did depress them at that time, and many people died for want of what was necessary to procure food withal, Queen Helena sent some of her servants to Alexandria with money to buy a great quantity of corn, and others of them to Cyprus, to bring a cargo of dried figs, and as soon as they were come back, and had brought those provisions, which was done very quickly, she distributed food to those that were in want of it, and left a most excellent memorial behind her of this benefaction, which she bestowed on our whole nation. And when her son Azates was informed of this famine, he sent great sums of money to the principal men in Jerusalem. However, what favors this queen and king conferred upon our city Jerusalem shall be further related hereafter. Chapter 3. But now Artabanus, king of the Parthians, perceiving that the governors of the provinces had framed a plot against him, did not think it safe for him to continue among them, but resolved to go to Azates, in hopes of finding some way for his preservation by his means, and, if possible, for his return to his own dominions. So he came to Azates, and brought 1,000 of his kindred and servants with him, and met him upon the road, while he well knew Azates, but Azates did not know him. When Artabanus stood near him, and, in the first place, worshipped him, according to the custom, he then said to him, O king, do not thou overlook me thy servant, nor do thou proudly reject the suit I make thee, for as I am reduced to a low estate, by the change of fortune, and of a king am become a private man, I stand in need of thy assistance. Have regard, therefore, unto the uncertainty of fortune, and esteem the care thou shalt take of me to be taken of thyself also, for if I be neglected, and my subjects go off unpunished, many other subjects will become the more insolent towards other kings also. And the speech Artabanus made with tears in his eyes, and with a dejected countenance. Now as soon as Azates heard Artabanus's name, and saw him stand, as a supplicant, before him, he leaped down from his horse immediately, and said to him, Take courage, O king, nor be disturbed at thy present calamity, as if it were incurable, for the change of thy sad condition shall be sudden, for thou shalt find me to be more thy friend, and thy assistant, and I hope can promise thee, for I will either re-establish thee in the kingdom of Parthia, or lose my own. When he had said this, he set Artabanus upon his horse, and followed him on foot, in honor of a king, whom he owned as greater than himself, which, when Artabanus saw, he was very uneasy at it, and sware by his present fortune and honor, that he would get down from his horse, unless Azates would get upon his horse again, and go before him. So he complied with his desire, and leaped upon his horse. And when he had brought him to his royal palace, he showed him all sorts of respect when they sat together, and he gave him the upper place at festivals also, as regarding not his present fortune, but his former dignity, and that upon this consideration also, that the changes of fortune are common to all men. He also wrote to the Parthians to persuade them to receive Artabanus again, and gave them his right hand, and his faith, that he should forget what was past and done, and that he would undertake for this, as a mediator between them. Now the Parthians did not themselves refuse to receive him again, but pleaded that it was not now in their power so to do, because they had committed the government to another person, who had accepted of it, and whose name was Cinemus, and that they were afraid lest a civil war should arise on this account. When Cinemus understood their intentions, he wrote to Artabanus himself, for he had been brought up by him, and was of a nature good and gentle also, and desired him to put confidence in him, and to come and take his own dominions again. Accordingly, Artabanus trusted him, and returned home, when Cinemus met him, worshipped him, and saluted him, as a king, and took the diadem off his own head, and put it on the head of Artabanus. And thus was Artahanus restored to his kingdom again by the means of his aids, when he had lost it by the means of the grandees of the kingdom. Nor was he unmindful of the benefit he had conferred upon him, but rewarded him with such honors as were of the greatest esteem among them, for he gave him leave to wear his tiara upright, and to sleep upon a golden bed, which are privileges and marks of honor peculiar to the kings of Parthia. He also cut off a large and fruitful country from the king of Armenia, and bestowed it upon him. The name of the country is Nisibis, wherein the Macedonians had formerly built that city which they called Antioch of Megadonlot. And these were the honors that were paid as aides by the king of the Parthians. But in no long time Artabanus died, and left his kingdom to his son Bardanes. Now this Bardanes came to his aides, and would have persuaded him to join him with his army, and to assist him in the war he was preparing to make with the Romans, but he could not prevail with him. For his aides so well knew the strength and good fortune of the Romans, that he took Bardanes to attempt what was impossible to be done, and having besides sent his sons, five in number, and they but young also, to learn accurately the language of our nation, together with our learning, as well, and he had sent his mother, to worship at our temple, as I have said already, was the more backward to a compliance, and restrained Bardanes, telling him perpetually of the great armies and famous actions of the Romans, and thought thereby to terrify him, and desired thereby to hinder him from that expedition. But the Parthian king was provoked at this his behavior, and denounced war immediately against his aides. Yet did he gain no advantage by this war, because God cut off all his hopes therein, for the Parthians perceiving Bardanus' intentions, and how he had determined to make war with the Romans, slew him, and gave his kingdom to his brother Godorzas. He also, in no long time, perished by a plot made against him, and Vologeses, his brother, succeeded him, who committed two of his provinces, to two of his brothers by the same father, that of the Medes, to the elder, Pacorus, and Armenia, to the younger, Tiridates. Chapter 4. Now when the king's brother, Monobazus, and his other kindred, saw how his aides, by his piety to God, was become greatly esteemed by all men, they also had the desire to leave the religion of their country, and to embrace the customs of the Jews, but that act of theirs was discovered by Isaac's subjects. Whereupon the grandees were much displeased, and could not contain their anger at them, but had an intention, when they should find a proper opportunity, to inflict a punishment upon them. Accordingly, they wrote to Avia, king of the Arabians, and promised him great sums of money, if he would make an expedition against their king, and they further promised him, that, on the first onset, they would desert their king, because they were desirous to punish him, by reason of the hatred he had to their religious worship. Then they obliged themselves, by oaths, to be faithful to each other, and desired that he would make haste in this design. The king of Arabia complied with their desires, and brought a great army into the field, and marched against Zates, and, in the beginning of the first onset, and before they came to a close fight, those handies, as if they had the panic terror upon them, all deserted Zates, as they had agreed to do, and, turning their backs upon their enemies, ran away. Yet was not Zates dismayed at this, but when he understood that the grandees had betrayed him, he also retired into his camp, and made inquiry into the matter, and as soon as he knew who they were that made this conspiracy with the king of Arabia, he cut off those that were found guilty, and renewing the fight on the next day, he slew the greatest part of his enemies, and forced all the rest to betake themselves to flight. He also pursued their king, and drove him into a fortress called Arsimus, and following on the siege vigorously, he took that fortress. And when he had plundered it of all the prey that was in it, which was not small, he returned to Abiaban, yet did not he take Abiaban alive, because, when he found himself encompassed on every side, he slew himself. But although the grandees of Abiaban had failed in their first attempt, as being delivered up by God into their king's hands, yet would they not even then be quiet, but wrote again to Vologases, who was then king of Parthia, and desired that he would kill his Zates, and set over them some other potentate, who should be of a Parthian family, for they said that they hated their own king, for abrogating the laws of their forefathers, and embracing foreign customs. When the king of Parthia heard this, he boldly made war upon his Zates, and he had no just pretense for this war, he sent to him, and demanded back those honorable privileges which had been bestowed on him by his father, and threatened, on his refusal, to make war upon him. Upon hearing of this, Zates was under no small trouble of mind, as thinking it would be a reproach upon him to appear to resign those privileges that had been bestowed upon him out of cowardice, yet, because he knew that though the king of Parthia should receive back those honors, yet would he not be quiet, he resolved to commit himself to God, his protector, in the present danger he was in of his life, and, as he esteemed him to be his principal assistant, he entrusted his children and his wives to a very strong fortress, and laid up his corn in his citadels, and set the hay and the grass on fire. And when he had thus put things in order, as well as he could, he awaited the coming of the enemy. And when the king of Parthia was come, with a great army of footmen and horsemen, which he did sooner than was expected, for he marched in great haste, and had cast up a bank at the river, that parted Adiaban from Media, Zates also pitched his camp not far off, having with him 6,000 horsemen. But there came a messenger to Zates, sent by the king of Parthia, who told him how large his dominions were, as reaching from the river Euphrates to Bactria, and enumerated that king's subjects. He also threatened him that he should be punished as a person ungrateful to his lords, and said that the God whom he worshipped could not deliver him out of the king's hands. When the messenger had delivered this his message, Zates replied that he knew the king of Parthia's power was much greater than his own, but that he knew also that God was much more powerful than all men. And when he had returned him this answer, he betook himself to make supplication to God, and threw himself upon the ground, and put ashes upon his head, in testimony of his confusion, and fasted, together with his wives and children. Then he called upon God, and said, O Lord and Governor, if I have not in vain committed myself to thy goodness, but have justly determined that thou only art the Lord, and principle of all beings, come now to my assistance, and defend me from my enemies, not only on my own account, but on account of their insolent behavior with regard to thy power, while they have not feared to lift up their proud and arrogant tongue against thee. Thus did he lament, and bemoan himself, with tears in his eyes, whereupon God heard his prayer. And immediately that very night Vologases received letters, the contents of which were these, that a great band of Dahian Saxae, despising him, now he was gone so long a journey from home, had made an expedition, and laid part his waste, so that he was forced to retire back, without doing anything. And thus it was that Zates escaped the threatenings of the Parthians, by the providence of God. It was not long ere Azates died, when he had completed 55 years of his life, and had ruled his kingdom 24 years. He left behind him 24 sons and 24 daughters. However, he gave order that his brother Manabazus should succeed in the government, thereby requiting him, because, while he was himself absent after their father's death, he had faithfully preserved the government for him. But when Helena, his mother, heard of her son's death, she was in great heaviness, as was but natural, upon her loss of such a most dutiful son. Yet was it a comfort to her that she heard the succession came to her eldest son. Accordingly, she went to him in haste, and when she was come into Adiabene, she did not long outlive her son Azates. But Manabazus sent her bones, as well as those of Azates, his brother, to Jerusalem, and gave order that they should be buried at the pyramids which their mother had erected. They were three in number, and distant no more than 3 furlongs from the city Jerusalem. But for the actions of Manabazus the king, which he did during the rest of his life, we will relate them hereafter. Chapter 5. Now it came to pass, while Phaetus was procurator of Judea, that a certain magician, whose name was Thutis, persuaded a great part of the people to take their effects with them, and follow him to the river Jordan, for he told them he was a prophet, and that he would, by his own command, divide the river, and afford them an easy passage over it, and many were deluded by his words. However, Phaetus did not permit them to make any advantage of his wild attempt, but sent a troop of horsemen out against them, who, falling upon them unexpectedly, slew many of them, and took many of them alive. They also took Thutis alive, and cut off his head, and carried it to Jerusalem. This was what befell the Jews, in the time of Cuspius Phaetus's government. Then came Tiberius Alexander as successor to Phaetus. He was the son of Alexander the Alabarch of Alexandria, which Alexander was a principal person among all his contemporaries, both for his family and wealth. He was also more eminent for his piety, and as his son Alexander, for he did not continue in the religion of his country. Under these procurators that great famine happened in Judea, in which Queen Helena bought corn in Egypt, at a great expense, and distributed it to those that were in want, as I have related already. And besides this, the sons of Judas of Galilee were now slain, I mean of that Judas who caused the people to revolt, when Cyrenius came to take an account of the estates of the Jews, as we have showed in a foregoing book. The names of those sons were James and Simon, whom Alexander commanded to be crucified. But now Herod, king of Chalcis, removed Joseph, the son of Chamed, from the high priesthood, and made Ananias, the son of Nebedoi, his successor. And now it was that Comnenus came as successor to Tiberius Alexander, as also that Herod, brother of Agrippa the great king, departed this life, in the 8th year of the reign of Claudius Caesar. He left behind him 3 sons, Aristobulus, whom he had by his first wife, with Bernice Onus, and Hyrcanus, both whom he had by Bernice his brother's daughter. But Claudius Caesar bestowed his dominions on Agrippa, Jr. Now while the Jewish affairs were under the administration of Hyrcanus, there happened a great tumult at the city of Jerusalem, and many of the Jews perished therein. But I shall first explain the occasion whence it was derived. When that feast which is called the Passover was at hand, at which time our custom is to use unleavened bread, and a great multitude was gathered together from all parts, to that feast, Comnenus was afraid lest some attempt of innovation should then be made by them, so he ordered that 1 regiment of the army should take their arms, and stand in the temple cloisters, to repress any attempts of innovation, if perchance any such should begin. And this was no more than what the former procurators of Judea did at such festivals. But on the 4th day of the feast, a certain soldier let down his breeches, and exposed his privy members, to the multitude, which put those that saw him into a furious rage, and made them cry out that this impious action was not done to approach them, but God himself. Nay, some of them reproached Comnenus, and pretended that the soldier was set on by him, which, when Comenius heard, he was also himself not a little provoked at such reproaches laid upon him. Yet did he exhort them to leave off such seditious attempts, and not to raise a tumult at the festival. But when he could not induce them to be quiet, for they still went on in their reproaches to him, he gave order that the whole army should take their entire armor, and come to Antonia, which was a fortress, as we have said already, which overlooked the temple. But when the multitude saw the soldiers there, they were affrighted at them, and ran away hastily. But as the passages out were but narrow, and as they thought their enemies followed them, they were crowded together in their flight. And a great number were pressed to death in those narrow passages, nor indeed was the number fewer than 20,000 that perished in this tumult. So instead of a festival, they had at last a mournful day of it, and they all of them forgot their prayers and sacrifices, and betook themselves to lamentation and weeping. So great an affliction did the impudent obsceneness of a single soldier bring upon them. Now before this their first mourning was over, another mischief befell them also, for some of those that raised the foregoing tumult, when they were travelling along the public road, about 100 furlongs from the city, robbed Stephanus, a servant of Caesar, as he was journeying, and plundered him of all that he had with him, which things, when Quirinus heard of, he sent soldiers immediately, and ordered them to plunder the neighboring villages, and to bring the most eminent persons among them in bonds to him. Now as this devastation was making, one of the soldiers seized the laws of Moses, that lay in one of those villages, and brought them out before the eyes of all present, and tore them to pieces. And this was done with reproachful language, and much scurrility, which things, when the Jews heard of, they ran together, and that in great numbers, and came down to Caesarea, where Comenius then was, and besought him that he would avenge, not themselves, but God himself, whose laws had been affronted. For that they could not bear to live any longer, if the laws of their forefathers must be affronted after this manner. Accordingly Comenius, out of fear, lest the multitude should go into a sedition, and by the advice of his friends also, took care that the soldier, who had offered the affront to the laws, should be beheaded, and thereby put a stop to the sedition which was ready to be kindled a second time. Chapter 6. Now there arose a quarrel between the Samaritans and the Jews on the occasion following. It was the custom of the Galileans, when they came to the holy city at the festivals, to take their journeys through the country of the Samaritans, and at this time there lay, in the road they took, a village that was called Gnea, which was situated in the limits of Samaria, and the great plain, where certain persons thereto belonging fought with the Galileans, and killed a great many of them. But when the principal of the Galileans were informed of what had been done, they came to Comenius, and desired him to avenge the murder of those that were killed. But he was induced by the Samaritans, with money, to do nothing in the matter, upon which the Galileans were much displeased, and persuaded the multitude of the Jews to betake themselves to arms, and to regain their liberty, saying that slavery was in itself a bitter thing, but that when it was joined with direct injuries, it was perfectly intolerable. And when their principal men endeavored to pacify them, and promised to endeavor to persuade Quirinus to avenge those that were killed, they would not hearken to them, but took their weapons, and entreated the assistance of Eleazar, the son of Dinius, a robber, who had many years made his abode in the mountains, with which assistance they plundered many villages of the Samaritans. When Comenius heard of this action of theirs, he took the band of Sebastant, with 4 regiments of footmen, and armed the Samaritans, and marched out against the Jews, and caught them, and slew many of them, and took a great number of them alive. Whereupon those that were the most eminent persons at Jerusalem, and that both in regard to the respect that was paid them, and the families they were of, as soon as they saw to what a height things were gone, put on sackcloth, and heaped ashes upon their heads, and by all possible means besought the seditious, and persuaded them that they would set before their eyes the utter subversion of their country, the conflagration of their temple, and the slavery of themselves, their wives, and children, which would be the consequences of what they were doing, and would alter their minds, would cast away their weapons, and for the future be quiet, and return to their own homes. These persuasions of theirs prevailed upon them. So the people dispersed themselves, and the robbers went away again to their places of strength, and after this time all Judea was overrun with robberies. But the principal of the Samaritans went to Amadeus Quadratus, the president of Syria, who at that time was at Tyre, and accused the Jews of setting their villages on fire, and plundering them, and said withal that they were not so much displeased at what they had suffered, as they were at the contempt thereby showed the Romans, while if they had received any injury, they ought to have made them the judges of what had been done, and not presently to make such devastation. As if they had not the Romans for their governors, on which account they came to him, in order to obtain that vengeance they wanted. This was the accusation which the Samaritans brought against the Jews. But the Jews affirmed that the Samaritans were the authors of this tumult and fighting, and that, in the first place, Comenius had been corrupted by their gifts, and passed over the murder of those that were slain in silence, which allegations, when Quadratus heard, he put off the hearing of the cause, and promised that he would give sentence when he should come into Judea, and should have a more exact knowledge of the truth of that matter. So these men went away without success. Yet was it not long ere Quadratus came to Samaria, where, upon hearing the cause, he supposed that the Samaritans were the authors of that disturbance. But when he was informed that certain of the Jews were making innovations, he ordered those to be crucified whom Comenius had taken captives. From whence he came to a certain village called Lydda, which was not less than a city in largeness, and there heard the Samaritan cause a second time before his tribunal, and there learned from a certain Samaritan that one of the chief of the Jews, whose name was Dorcas, and some other innovators with him, four in number, persuaded the multitude to a revolt from the Romans, whom Quadratus ordered to be put to death, but still he sent away Ananias the high priest, and Ananias the commander of the temple in bonds to Rome, to give an account of what they had done to Claudius Caesar. He also ordered the principal men, both of the Samaritans and of the Jews, as also Comenius the procurator, and Caesar the tribune, to go to Italy, to the emperor, that he might hear their cause, and determine their differences one with another. But he came again to the city of Jerusalem, out of his fear that the multitude of the Jews should attempt some innovations, but he found the city in a peaceable state, and celebrating one of the usual festivals of their country the god. So he believed that they would not attempt any innovations, and left them at the celebration of the festival, and returned to Antioch. Now Comenius, and the principal of the Samaritans, who were sent to Rome, had a day appointed them by the emperor whereon they were to have pleaded their cause about the quarrels they had one with another. But now Caesar's freedmen and his friends were very zealous on the behalf of Comenius and the Samaritans, and they had prevailed over the Jews, unless Agrippa Junior, who was then at Rome, had seen the principal of the Jews hard set, and had earnestly entreated Agrippina, the emperor's wife, to persuade her husband to hear the cause, so as was agreeable to his justice, and to condemn those to be punished who were really the authors of this revolt from the Roman government. Whereupon Claudius was so well disposed beforehand, that when he had heard the cause, and found that the Samaritans had been the ringleaders in those mischievous doings, he gave order that those who came up to him should be slain, and that Quirinus should be banished. He also gave order that Caesar the tribune should be carried back to Jerusalem, and should be drawn through the city in the sight of all the people, and then should be slain. Chapter 7. So Claudius sent Felix, the brother of Ballas, to take care of the affairs of Judea, and when he had already completed the 12th year of his reign, he bestowed upon Agrippa the Tetrarchy of Philippandbotonia, and added there two Trachonites, with Abila, which last had been the Tetrarchy of Lysanias, but he took from him Chalcis, when he had been governor thereof 4 years. And when Agrippa had received these countries, as the gift of Caesar, he gave his sister Drusilla in marriage to Azizus, king of Emesa, upon his consent, to be circumcised, for Epiphanes, the son of King Antiochus, had refused to marry her because, after he had promised her father formerly to come over to the Jewish religion, he would not now perform that promise. He also gave Meridamna in marriage to Arshelo, the son of Helcias, to whom she had formerly been betrothed by Agrippa her father, from which marriage was derived a daughter, whose name was Bernice. But for the marriage of Drusilla with Azizus, it was in no long time afterward dissolved. Upon the following occasion, while Felix was procurator of Judea, he saw this Drusilla, and fell in love with her, for she did indeed exceed all other women in beauty, and he sent to her a person, whose name was Simon, one of his friends, a Jew he was, and by birth a Cypriot, and one who pretended to be a magician, and endeavored to persuade her to forsake her present husband, and marry him, and promised that if she would not refuse him, he would make her a happy woman. Accordingly she acted ill, and, because she was desirous to avoid her sister Bernice's envy, for she was very ill-treated by her on account of her beauty, was prevailed upon to transgress the laws of her forefathers, and to marry Felix, and when he had had a son by her, he named him Agrippa. But after what manner that young man, with his wife, perished at the conflagration of the mountain Vesuvius, in the days of Titus Caesar, shall be related hereafter. But as for Bernice, she lived a widow a long while, after the death of Herod king of Chalcis, who was both her husband, and her uncle. But when the report went that she had criminal conversation with her brother, Agrippa, Jr., she persuaded Polym, who was king of Cilicia, to be circumcised, and to marry her, as supposing that by this means she should prove those calumnies upon her to be false, and Polym was prevailed upon, and that chiefly on account of her riches. Yet did not this matrimony endure long, but Bernice left Polym, and, as was said, with impure intentions. So he forsook at once this matrimony, and the Jewish religion, and, at the same time, Meridamna put away Archelaus, and was married to Demetrius, the principal man among the Alexandrian Jews, both for his family, and his wealth, and indeed he was then their Alabarch. So she named her son whom she had by him Agrippinus. But of all these particulars we shall hereafter treat more exactly. Chapter 8. Now Claudius Caesar died when he had reigned 13 years, 8 months, and 20 days, and a report went about that he was poisoned by his wife Agrippina. Her father was Germanicus, the brother of Caesar. Her husband was Domitius Aenobarbus, one of the most illustrious persons that was in the city of Rome, after whose death, and her long continuance in widowhood, Claudius took her to wife. She brought along with her a son, Dom Titus, of the same name with his father. He had before this slain his wife Messalina, out of jealousy, by whom he had his children Britonicus and Octavia. Their oldest sister was Antonia, whom he had by Polina his first wife. He also married Octavia to Nero, for that was the name that Caesar gave him afterward, upon his adopting him for his son. But now Agrippina was afraid, lest, when Britonicus should come to man's estate, he should succeed his father in the government, and desired to seize upon the principality beforehand for her own son Nero, upon which the report went that she thence compassed the death of Claudius. Accordingly, she sent Burrus, the general of the army, immediately, and with him the tribunes, and such also of the freedmen as were of the greatest authority, to bring Nero away into the camp, and to salute him emperor. And when Nero had thus obtained the government, he got Britonicus to be so poisoned, that the multitude should not perceive it, although he publicly put his own mother to death not long afterward, making her this requital, not only for being born of her, but for bringing it so about by her contrivances, that he obtained the Roman Empire. He also slew Octavia his own wife, and many other illustrious persons, under this pretense, that they plotted against him. But I omit any further discourse about these affairs, for there have been a great many who have composed the history of Nero, some of which have departed from the truth of facts out of favor, as having received benefits from him, while others, out of hatred to him, and the great ill will which they bear him, have so impudently raved against him with their lies, that they justly deserve to be condemned. Nor do I wonder at such as have told lies of Nero, since they have not in their writings preserved the truth of history, as to those facts, that were earlier than his time, even when the actors could have no way incurred their hatred, since those writers lived a long time after them. But as to those that have no regard to truth, they may write, as they please, for in that they take delight. But as to ourselves, who have made truth our direct aim, we shall briefly touch upon what only belongs remotely to this undertaking, but shall relate what hath happened to us Jews, with great accuracy, and shall not grudge our pains, in giving an account both of the calamities we have suffered, and of the crimes we have been guilty of. I will now therefore return to the relation of our own affairs. For in the first year of the reign of Nero, upon the death of Azizus, king of Emesa, Somus, his brother, succeeded in his kingdom, and Aristobulus, the son of Herod, king of Chalcis, was entrusted by Nero with the government of the Lesser Armenia. Caesar also bestowed on Agrippa a certain part of Galilee, Tiberias, and Tarichae, and ordered them to submit to his jurisdiction. He gave him also Julius, a city of Perea, with 14 villages, that lay about it. Now as for the affairs of the Jews, they grew worse and worse continually, for the country was again filled with robbers and impostors, who deluded the multitude. Yet did Felix catch and put to death many of those impostors every day, together with the robbers. He also caught Eleazar, the son of Denes, who had gotten together a company of robbers, and this he did by treachery, for he gave him assurance that he should suffer no harm, and thereby persuaded him to come to him, but when he came, he bound him, and sent him to Rome. Felix also bore an ill will to Jonathan, the high priest, because he frequently gave him admonitions about governing the Jewish affairs better than he did, lest he should himself have complaints made of him by the multitude, since he it was who had desired Caesar to send him as procurator of Judea. So Felix contrived a method whereby he might get rid of him. Now he was become so continually troublesome to him, for such continual admonitions are grievous to those who are disposed to act unjustly. Wherefore Felix persuaded one of Jonathan's most faithful friends, a citizen of Jerusalem, whose name was Doris, to bring the robbers upon Jonathan, in order to kill him, and this he did by promising to give him a great deal of money for so doing. Doris complied with the proposal, and contrived matters so that the robbers might murder him after the following manner. Certain of those robbers went up to the city, as if they were going to worship God, while they had daggers under their garments, and by thus mingling themselves among the multitude they slew Jonathan. And, as this murder was never avenged, the robbers went up with the greatest security at the festivals, after this time, and having weapons concealed in like manner, as before, and mingling themselves among the multitude, they slew certain of their own enemies, and were subservient to other men for money, and slew others, not only in remote parts of the city, but in the temple itself also, for they had the boldness to murder men there, without thinking of the impiety of which they were guilty. And this seems to me to have been the reason why God, out of his hatred of these men's wickedness, rejected our city, and, as for the temple, he no longer esteemed it sufficiently pure for him to inhabit therein, but brought the Romans upon us, and threw a fire upon the city to purge it, and brought upon us, our wives, and children, slavery, as desirous to make us wiser by our calamities. These works, that were done by the robbers, filled the city with all sorts of impiety. And now these impostors and deceivers persuaded the multitude to follow them into the wilderness, and pretended that they would exhibit manifest wonders and signs that should be performed by the providence of God. And many that were prevailed on by them suffered the punishments of their folly, for Felix brought them back, and then punished them. Moreover, there came out of Egypt, about this time to Jerusalem one that said he was a prophet, and advised the multitude of the common people to go along with him to the Mount of Olives, as it was called, which lay over against the city, and at the distance of 5 furlongs. He said further, that he would show them from hence how, at his command, the walls of Jerusalem would fall down, and he promised them that he would procure them an entrance into the city through those walls, when they were fallen down. Now when Felix was informed of these things, he ordered his soldiers to take their weapons, and came against them with a great number of horsemen and footmen from Jerusalem, and attacked the Egyptian and the people that were with him. He also slew 400 of them, and took 200 alive. But the Egyptian himself escaped out of the fight, but did not appear any more. And again the robbers stirred up the people to make war with the Romans, and said they ought not to obey them at all, and when any persons would not comply with them, they set fire to their villages, and plundered them. And now it was that a great sedition arose between the Jews that inhabited Caesarea, and the Syrians, who dwelt there also, concerning their equal right to the privileges belonging to citizens, for the Jews claimed the preeminence, because Herod their king was the builder of Caesarea, and because he was by birth a Jew. Now the Syrians did not deny what was alleged about Herod, but they said that Caesarea was formerly called Strato's Tower, and that then there was not one Jewish inhabitant. When the presidents of that country heard of these disorders, they caught the authors of them on both sides, and tormented them with stripes, and by that means put a stop to the disturbance for a time. But the Jewish citizens, depending on their wealth, and on that account despising the Syrians, reproached them again, and hoped to provoke them by such reproaches. However, the Syrians, though they were inferior in wealth, yet valuing themselves highly on this account, that the greatest part of the Roman soldiers that were they were either of Caesarea or Sebastant, they also for some time used reproachful language to the Jews also, and thus it was, till at length they came to throwing stones at one another, and several were wounded, and fell on both sides, though still the Jews were the conquerors. But when Felix saw that this quarrel was become a kind of war, he came upon them on a sudden, and desired the Jews to desist, and when they refused so to do, he armed his soldiers, and sent them out upon them, and slew many of them, and took more of them alive, and permitted his soldiers to plunder some of the houses of the citizens, which were full of riches. Now those Jews that were more moderate, and of principal dignity among them, were afraid of themselves, and desired of Felix that he would sound retreat to his soldiers, and spare them for the future, and afford them room for repentance for what they had done, and Felix was prevailed upon to do so. About this time King Agrippa gave the high priesthood to Ismael, who was the son of Phabi. And now arose a sedition between the high priests and the principal men of the multitude of Jerusalem, each of which got them a company of the boldest sort of men, and of those that loved innovations about them, and became leaders to them, and when they struggled together, they did it by casting reproachful words against one another, and by throwing stones also. And there was nobody to reprove them, but these disorders were done after a licentious manner, in the city, as if it had no government over it. And such was the impudence and boldness that had seized on the high priests, that they had the hardiness to send their servants into the threshing floors, to take away those tithes that were due to the priests, insomuch that it so fell out that the poorest sort of the priests died for want. To this degree did the violence of the seditious prevail over all right and justice. Now when Porcius Festus was sent as successor to Felix by Nero, the principal of the Jewish inhabitants of Caesarea went up to Rome to accuse Felix, and he had certainly been brought to punishment, unless Nero had yielded to the importunate solicitations of his brother Pallas, who was at that time had in the greatest honor by him. Two of the principal Syrians in Caesarea persuaded Burrus, who was Nero's tutor and secretary for his Greek epistles, by giving him a great sum of money, to disannul that equality of the Jewish privileges of citizens which they hitherto enjoyed. Soberus, by his solicitations, obtained leave of the emperor that an epistle should be written to that purpose. This epistle became the occasion of the following miseries that befell our nation, For when the Jews of Caesarea were informed of the contents of this epistle to the Syrians, they were more disorderly than before, till a war was kindled. Upon Festus's coming into Judea, it happened that Judea was afflicted by the robbers, while all the villages were set on fire, and plundered by them. And then it was that the Sicarii, as they were called, who were robbers, grew numerous. They made use of small swords, not much different in length from the Persian Asinaki, but somewhat crooked, and like the Roman Sicci, or Sickles, as they were called. And from these weapons these robbers got their denomination, and with these weapons they slew a great many, for they mingled themselves among the multitude at their festivals, when they were come up in crowds from all parts, to the city to worship God, as we said before, and easily slew those that they had a mind to slay. They also came frequently upon the villages belonging to their enemies, with their weapons, and plundered them, and set them on fire. So Festus sent forces, both horsemen and footmen, to fall upon those that had been seduced by a certain impostor, who promised them deliverance, and freedom from the miseries they were under, if they would but follow him as far as the wilderness. Accordingly, those forces that were sent destroyed both him that had deluded them, and those that were his followers also. About the same time King Agrippa built himself a very large dining room, in the royal palace at Jerusalem, near to the portico. Now this palace had been erected of old by the children of Asimonius, and was situate upon an elevation, and afforded a most delightful prospect to those that had a mind to take a view of the city, which prospect was desired by the king, and there he could lie down, and eat, and thence observe what was done in the temple, which thing, when the chief men of Jerusalem saw they were very much displeased at it, for it was not agreeable to the institutions of our country or law, that what was done in the temple should be viewed by others, especially what belonged to the sacrifices. They therefore erected wall upon the uppermost building which belonged to the inner court of the temple towards the west, which wall, when it was built, did not only intercept the prospect of the dining room in the palace, but also of the western cloisters, that belonged to the outer court of the temple also, where it was that the Romans kept guards for the temple at the festivals. At these doings both King Agrippa, and principally Festus the procurator, were much displeased, and Festus ordered them to pull the wall down again, but the Jews petitioned him to give them leave to send an embassage about this matter to Nero, for they said they could not endure to live if any part of the temple should be demolished, and when Festus had given them leave so to do, they sent 10 of their principal men to Nero, as also Ismael the high priest, and Helcias, the keeper of the sacred treasure. And when Nero had heard what they had to say, he not only forgave them what they had already done, but also gave them leave to let the wall they had built stand. This was granted them in order to gratify Poppy, Nero's wife, who was a religious woman, and had requested these favors of Nero, and who gave order to the 10 ambassadors to go their way home, but retained Helcias and Ismael as hostages with herself. As soon as the king heard this news, he gave the high priesthood to Joseph, who was called Cabi, the son of Simon, formerly high priest. Chapter 9. And now Caesar, upon hearing the death of Festus, sent Albinus into Judea as procurator. But the king deprived Joseph of the high priesthood, and bestowed the succession to that dignity on the son of an Annas, who was also himself called an Annas. Now the report goes that this eldest Annas proved a most fortunate man, for he had 5 sons, who had all performed the office of a high priest to God, and who had himself enjoyed that dignity a long time formerly, which had never happened to any other of our high priests. But this younger Annas, who, as we have told you already, took the high priesthood, was a bold man in his temper, and very insolent. He was also of the sect of the Sadducees, who are very rigid in judging offenders, above all the rest of the Jews, as we have already observed. When, therefore, Annas was of this disposition, he thought he had now a proper opportunity to exercise his authority. Festus was now dead, and Albinus was but upon the road, so he assembled the Sanhedrin of judges, and brought before them the brother of Jesus, who was called Christ, whose name was James, and some others, or some of his companions, and when he had formed an accusation against them as breakers of the law, he delivered them to be stoned. But as for those who seemed the most equitable of the citizens, and such as were the most uneasy at the breach of the laws, they disliked what was done. They also sent to the king Agrippa, desiring him to send to Ananias, that he should act so no more, for that what he had already done was not to be justified. Nay, some of them went also to meet Albinus, as he was upon his journey from Alexandria, and informed him that it was not lawful for Ananias to assemble a Sanhedrin without his consent. Whereupon Albinus complied with what they said, and wrote in anger to Ananias, and threatened that he would bring him to punishment for what he had done, on which King Agrippa took the high priesthood from him, when he had ruled but 3 months, and made Jesus, the son of Damnus, high priest. Now as soon as Albinus was come to the city of Jerusalem, he used all his endeavors and care that the country might be kept in peace, and this by destroying many of the sicarii. But as for the high priest Ananias, he increased in glory every day, and this to a great degree, and had obtained the favor and esteem of the citizens in a signal manner, for he was a great hoarder up of money. He therefore cultivated the friendship of Albinus and of the high priest Jesus, by making them presents. He also had servants who were very wicked, who joined themselves to the boldest sort of the people, and went to the thrashing floors, and took away the tithes that belonged to the priests by violence, and did not refrain from beating such as would not give these tithes to them. So the other high priests acted in the like manner, as did those his servants, without any one being able to prohibit them, so that some of the priests, that of old were wont to be supported with those tithes, died for want of food. But now the sicarii went into the city by night, just before the festival, which was now at hand, and took the scribe belonging to the governor of the temple, whose name was Eleazar, who was the son of Ananias the high priest, and bound him, and carried him away with them, after which they sent to Ananias, and said that they would send the scribe to him, if he would persuade Albinus to release 10 of those prisoners which he had caught of their party. So Ananias was plainly forced to persuade Albinus, and gained his request of him. This was the beginning of greater calamities, for the robbers perpetually contrived to catch some of Ananias's servants, and when they had taken them alive, they would not let them go, till they thereby recovered some of their own sicarii. And as they were again become no small number, they grew bold, and were a great affliction to the whole country. About this time it was that King Agrippa built Caesarea Philippia larger than it was before, and, in honor of Nero, named it Narinlos. And when he had built a theatre at Berytus, with vast expenses, he bestowed on them shows, to be exhibited every year, and spent therein many 10,000 drachmae. He also gave the people a largess of corn, and distributed oil among them, and adorned the entire city with statues of his own donation, and with original images made by ancient hands. Nay, he almost transferred all that was most ornamental in his own kingdom thither. This made him more than ordinarily hated by his subjects, because he took those things away that belonged to them to adorn a foreign city. And now Jesus, the son of Gamaliel, became the successor of Jesus, the son of Damnius, in the high priesthood, which the king had taken from the other, on which account the sedition arose between the high priests, with regard to one another, for they got together bodies of the boldest sort of the people, and frequently came, from reproaches, to throwing of stones at each other. But Ananias was too hard for the rest, by his riches, which enabled him to gain those that were most ready to receive. Cusabarus also, and Saulus, did themselves get together a multitude of wicked wretches, and this, because they were of the royal family, and so they obtained favor among them, because of their kindred to Agrippa, but still they used violence with the people, and were very ready to plunder those that were weaker than themselves. And from that time it principally came to pass that our city was greatly disordered, and that all things grew worse and worse among us. But when Albinus heard that Gassius Florus was coming to succeed him, he was desirous to appear to do somewhat that might be grateful to the people of Jerusalem. So he brought out all those prisoners, who seemed to him to be most plainly worthy of death, and ordered them to be put to death accordingly. But as to those who had been put into prison on some trifling occasions, he took money of them, and dismissed them, by which means the prisons were indeed emptied, but the country was filled with robbers. Now as many of the Levites, which is a tribe of ours, as were singers of hymns, persuaded the king to assemble a Sanhedrin, and to give them leave to wear linen garments, as well as the priests, for they said that this would be a work worthy the times of his government, that he might have a memorial of such a novelty, as being his doing. Nor did they fail of obtaining their desire. For the king, with the suffrages of those that came into the Sanhedrin, granted the singers of hymns this privilege, that they might lay aside their former garments, and wear such a linen one, as they desired, and, as a part of this tribe ministered in the temple, he also permitted them to learn those hymns, as they had besought him for. Now all this was contrary to the laws of our country, which, whenever they have been transgressed, we have never been able to avoid the punishment of such transgressions. And now it was that the temple was finished. So when the people saw that the workmen were unemployed, who were above 18,000, and that they, receiving no wages, were in want, because they had earned their bread by their labors about the temple, and while they were unwilling to keep by them the treasures that were there deposited, out of fear of their being carried away by the Romans, and while they had regard to the making provision for the workmen, they had a mind to expend these treasures upon them. For if any one of them did but labor for a single hour, he received his pay immediately, so they persuaded him to rebuild the eastern cloisters. These cloisters belonged to the outer court, and were situated in a deep valley, and had walls that reached 400 cubits in length, and were built of square and very white stones, the length of each of which stones was 20 cubits, and their height 6 cubits. This was the work of King Solomon, who first of all built the entire temple. But King Agrippa, who had the care of the temple committed to him by Claudius Caesar, considering that it is easy to demolish any building, but hard to build it up again, and that it was particularly hard to do it to these cloisters, which would require a considerable time and great sums of money, he denied the petitioners their request about that matter, but he did not obstruct them when they desired the city might be paved with white stone. He also deprived Jesus, the son of Gamaliel, of the high priesthood, and gave it to Matthias, the son of Theophilus, under whom the Jews were, with the Romans took its beginning. Chapter 10. And now I think it proper and agreeable to this history, to give an account of our high priests, how they began, who those are which are capable of that dignity, and how many of them there had been at the end of the war. In the first place, therefore, history informs us that Aaron, the brother of Moses, officiated to God as a high priest, and that, after his death, his son succeeded him immediately, and that this dignity hath been continued down from them all to their posterity. Whence it is a custom of our country, that no one should take the high priesthood of God, but he, who is of the blood of Aaron, while everyone, that is of another stock, though he were a king, can never obtain that high priesthood. Accordingly, the number of all the high priests from Aaron, of whom we have spoken already, as of the first of them, until Phinehas, who was made high priest during the war by the seditious, was 83, of whom 13 officiated as high priests in the wilderness, from the days of Moses, while the tabernacle was standing, until the people came into Judea, when King Solomon erected the temple to God. For at the first they held the high priesthood, till the end of their life, although afterward they had successors, while they were alive. Now these 13, who were the descendants of two of the sons of Aaron, received this dignity by succession, one after another, for their form of government was an aristocracy, and after that a monarchy, and in the third place the government was regal. Now the number of years during the rule of these 13, from the day when our fathers departed out of Egypt, under Moses their leader, until the building of that temple which King Solomon erected at Jerusalem, were 612. After those 13 high priests, 18 took the high priesthood at Jerusalem, one in succession to another, from the days of King Solomon until Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, made an expedition against that city, and burnt the temple, and removed our nation into Babylon, and then took Josedech, the high priest, captive. The times of these high priests were 466 years, 6 months, and 10 days, while the Jews were still under the regal government. But after the term of 70 years captivity, under the Babylonians, Cyrus, king of Persia, sent the Jews from Babylon to their own land again, and gave them leave to rebuild their temple, at which time Jesus, the son of Josedech, took the high priesthood over the captives, when they were returned home. Now he and his posterity, who were in all 15, until King Antiochus, were under a democratical government, for 414 years, and then the aforementioned Antiochus, and Lysias the general of his army, deprived Onias, who was also called Menelaus, of the high priesthood, and slew him at Berea, and driving away the son of Onias the third put Jaimus, into the place of the high priest, one, that was indeed of the stock of Aaron, but not of that family of Onias. On which account Onias, who was the nephew of Onias, that was dead, and bore the same name with his father, came into Egypt, and got into the friendship of Ptolemy Philometor, and Cleopatra his wife, and persuaded them to make him the high priest of that temple which he built to God, in the prefecture of Heliopolis, and this in imitation of that at Jerusalem. But as for that temple which was built in Egypt, we have spoken of it frequently already. Now when Hosemus had retained the priesthood 3 years, he died, and there was no one that succeeded him, but the city continued 7 years without a high priest. But then the posterity of the sons of Asimonius, who had the government of the nation conferred upon them, when they had beaten the Macedonians in war, appointed Jonathan to be their high priest, who ruled over them 7 years. And when he had been slain by the treacherous contrivance of Trypho, as we have related somewhere, Simon his brother took the high priesthood, and when he was destroyed at a feast by the treachery of his son-in-law, his own son, whose name was Hyrcanus, succeeded him, after he had held the high priesthood 1 year longer than his brother. This Hyrcanus enjoyed that dignity 30 years, and died an old man, leaving the succession to Judas, who was also called Aristobulus, whose brother Alexander was his heir, which Judas died of a sore distemper, after he had kept the priesthood, together with the royal authority, for this Judas was the first that put on his head a diadem for 1 year. And when Alexander had been both king and high priest 27 years, he departed this life, and permitted his wife Alexandra to appoint him that should he high priest, so she gave the high priesthood to Hyrcanus, but retained the kingdom herself 9 years, and then departed this life. The like duration and no longer did her son Hyrcanus enjoy the high priesthood, for after her death his brother Aristobulus fought against him, and beat him, and deprived him of his principality, and he did himself both reign, and perform the office of high priest to God. But when he had reigned 3 years, and as many months, Pompey came upon him, and not only took the city of Jerusalem by force, but put him and his children in bonds, and sent them to Rome. He also restored the high priesthood to Hyrcanus, and made him governor of the nation, but forbade him to wear a diadem. This Hyrcanus ruled, besides his first 9 years, 24 years more, when Barzapharnes and Pacorus, the generals of the Parthians, passed over Euphrates, and fought with Hyrcanus, and took him alive, and made Antigonus, the son of Aristobulus, king. And when he had reigned 3 years, and 3 months, Sosius and Herod besieged him, and took him, when Antony had him brought to Antioch, and slain there. Herod was then made king by the Romans, but did no longer appoint high priests out of the family of Asimonius, but made certain men, to be so that were of no eminent families, but barely of those that were priests, excepting that he gave that dignity to Aristobulus, for when he had made this Aristobulus, the grandson of that Hyrcanus who was then taken by the Parthians, and had taken his sister Mariamne to wife, he thereby aimed to win the goodwill of the people, who had a kind remembrance of Hyrcanus his grandfather. Yet did he afterward, out of his fear, lest they should all bend their inclinations to Aristobulus, put him to death, and that by contriving how to have him suffocated, as he was swimming at Jericho, as we have already related that matter. But after this man he never entrusted the priesthood to the posterity of the sons of Asimonius. Arshalo also, Herod's son, did like his father in the appointment of the high priests, as did the Romans also, who took the government over the Jews into their hands afterward. Accordingly, the number of the high priests, from the days of Herod until the day when Titus took the temple and the city and burnt them, were in all 28. The time also that belonged to them was 107 years. Some of these were the political governors of the people under the reign of Herod and under the reign of Arshalo his son, although, after their death, the government became an aristocracy, and the high priests were entrusted with the dominion over the nation. And thus much may suffice to be said concerning our high priests. Chapter 11. Now Gaius Florus, who was sent as successor to Albinus by Nero, filled Judea with abundance of miseries. He was by birth of the city of Clazomenae, and brought along with him his wife Cleopatra, by whose friendship with Poppy, Nero's wife, he obtained this government, who was no way different from him in wickedness. This Florus was so wicked, and so violent in the use of his authority, that the Jews took Albinus to have been comparatively their benefactor, so excessive were the mischiefs that he brought upon them. For Albinus concealed his wickedness, and was careful that it might not be discovered to all men. But Gaius Florus, as though he had been sent on purpose to show his crimes to everybody, made a pompous ostentation of them to our nation, as never omitting any sort of violence, nor any unjust sort of punishment, for he was not to be moved by pity, and never was satisfied with any degree of gain that came in his way. Nor had he any more regard to great than to small acquisitions, but became a partner with the robbers themselves. For a great many fell then into that practice without fear, as having him for their security, and depending on him, that he would save them harmless in their particular robberies, so that there were no bounds set to the nation's miseries. But the unhappy Jews, when they were not able to bear the devastations which the robbers made among them, were all under a necessity of leaving their own habitations, and of flying away, as hoping to dwell more easily anywhere else in the world among foreigners, and in their own country. And what need I say any more upon this head? Since it was this Florus who necessitated us to take up arms against the Romans, while we thought it better to be destroyed at once than by little and little. Now this war began in the second year of the government of Florus, and the 12th year of the reign of Nero. But then what actions we were forced to do, or what miseries we were enabled to suffer, may be accurately known by such as will peruse those books which I have written about the Jewish war. I shall now, therefore, make canon here of my antiquities, after the conclusion of which events I began to write that account of the war, and these antiquities contain what hath been delivered down to us from the original creation of man until the 12th year of the reign of Nero, as to what hath befallen the Jews, as well in Egypt, as in Syria, and in Palestine, and what we have suffered from the Assyrians and Babylonians, and what afflictions the Persians and Macedonians, and after them the Romans, have brought upon us, for I think I may say that I have composed this history with sufficient accuracy in all things. I have attempted to enumerate those high priests that we have had during the interval of 2,000 years. I have also carried down the succession of our kings, and related their actions, and political administration, without considerable errors, as also the power of our monarchs, and all according to what is written in our sacred books, for this it was that I promised to do in the beginning of this history. And I am so bold as to say Now I have so completely perfected the work I proposed to myself to do, that no other person, whether he were a Jew or foreigner, had he ever so great an inclination to it, could so accurately deliver these accounts to the Greeks as is done in these books. For those of my own nation freely acknowledge that I far exceed them in the learning belonging to Jews. I have also taken a great deal of pains to obtain the learning of the Greeks, and understand the elements of the Greek language, although I have so long accustomed myself to speak our own tongue, that I cannot pronounce Greek with sufficient exactness. For our nation does not encourage those that learn the languages of many nations, and so adorn their discourses with the smoothness of their periods. Because they look upon this sort of accomplishment as common, not only to all sorts of freemen, but to as many of the servants as please to learn them. But they give him the testimony of being a wise man, who is fully acquainted with our laws, and is able to interpret their meaning, on which account, as there have been many who have done their endeavors with great patience, to obtain this learning, there have yet hardly been so many, as 2 or 3 that have succeeded therein, who were immediately well rewarded for their pains. And now it will not be perhaps an invidious thing, if I treat briefly of my own family, and of the actions of my own life, while there are still living such, as can either prove what I say to be false, or can attest that it is true, with which accounts I shall put an end to these antiquities, which are contained in 20 books, and 60,000 verses. And if God permit me, I will briefly run over this war, and to add what befell them further to that very day, the 13th of Domitian, or AD 03, is not, that I have observed, taken distinct notice of by any one, nor do we ever again, with what befell us therein to this very day, which is the 13th year of the reign of Caesar Domitian, and the 56th year of my own life. I have also an intention to write 3 books concerning our Jewish opinions about God, and His essence, and about our laws, why, according to them, some things are permitted us to do, and others are prohibited. The End of Antiquities of the Jews, Book 20. This concludes the Antiquities books by Flavius Josephus.
Be sure and visit www.paradisepbc.org and find many more study resources and MP3 audio files.